You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. Moving on, we're going to be talking about GateHub. Now, this is a cryptocurrency exchange. Cyber criminals stole 3.2 million Ripple coins, which is a cryptocurrency worth nearly $10 million US from users. And so if you have Ripple coins and you use GateHub, heads up, you might have just been ripped off. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Tech Data. They are a major supplier to businesses, IT companies, corporations of technology, computer equipment, et cetera, and probably some of you that are listening here use Tech Data because I have a lot of followers that are also in various nerd industries like myself. Now, the company's log management server was leaking personal data, and not a little bit, 264 gig worth of data, and this is not inconsequential. Now, a sample of this data seen by TechCrunch contained names, postal addresses, email addresses, job titles, invoicing data, receipts, as well as partial payment information like card type, card holder, expiration dates. Now, while the card numbers weren't there, they were obfuscated, the data wasn't encrypted, and it's possible that there's more than this. So this just hit, and going through 264 gig of data is a massive, massive job, but this is a very serious issue that may have very serious repercussions because a lot of the third-party IT companies that corporations use buy from Tech Data, compromise them, compromise corporations. So we'll see where this goes, but that's a very serious issue. And we are going to keep on rolling here because we are not done. Retro gaming website EMU Paradise has been involved in a data breach leading to the exposure of 1.1 million user accounts. This hit took place on April 1st, 2018, but has only recently emerged when Have I Been Pwned, the website, basically found a database containing these people's information. So if you have anything to do with EMU Paradise, it's where you get like emulator ROMs for like old video game systems. So you can download like old Nintendo games and then play them on your computer, that kind of thing. So if you use this website, heads up to you. Moving on, we're heading to China. An exposed database belonging to Shanghai Jiaotong University exposed 8.4 terabytes in email metadata after failing to implement basic authentication demands. The exposed server was discovered on May 22, 2019 by Cloudflare's Director of Trust and Safety, Justin Payne. Now, as described in a security blog, Payne found the Elasticsearch database through a Shodan search. Shodan is a place you can go and look for open databases, open cameras, all this kind of stuff. Now, this database contained 9.5 billion rows of data and was actually active at the time of its discovery, and researchers had seen it grow from 7 terabytes to 8.4 terabytes in the time that they were monitoring this. So if you have anything to do with Shanghai's Jiaotong University, heads up. Moving back to the United States, we're talking about Humana. Now, Humana is saying, their insurance company is saying that they are notifying 5,565 members of a security incident that exposed members' personal information. An internal review found that hackers had access to a portal between January 15, 2016 and February 21st, 2018, so 2 years or so, and then apparently there's a break because they came back from May 24, 2018 to November 8, 2018, and Humana alerted patients on March 5th and April 4th of this year. Humana said no member data has been misused, at least as far as they can tell, which is virtually impossible to confirm. Information may have been exposed that includes names, member identification numbers, plan effective date, benefit information, care reminders, which alerts physicians if screenings and lab tests need to be completed, and on and on and on, but no social security numbers or banking information was exposed. So if you use Humana, you might want to check into them. Moving on, we're heading to Nova Scotia, Canada. Medical records of 2,841 people could have been compromised after the Nova Scotia Health Authority, basically one of their employees, recently fell victim to an email scam. And this is according to a press release released about 2 weeks ago or so from when I'm talking about this live. The health authority is in the process of sending out notifications to basically who they believe was affected by this, as well as next of kin, due to this potential privacy breach. Now, the press release said that the employee was a victim of a phishing attack after receiving an email that appeared legitimate, pretty common for phishing attacks. The employee may have provided their computer login information in the link provided. But the release stopped short of saying whether the employee provided necessary information to access medical records. And I quote, "Everyone who is possibly affected will hear directly from the health authority, and we will be available to discuss the details of the possible breaches of confidentiality with them." And so if you are in Nova Scotia, heads up to you. Your Canadian health system up there, the Nova Scotia health system, may have gotten you breached. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Radisson, the hotel chain. Now, Radisson Rewards just said that it, quote, inadvertently sent some emails to the wrong members. Now, information accidentally disclosed was apparently limited to members' first names, last four digits of their member number, point balance, member tier, number of hotel stays in 2019, and the member's email address. So if you got an email from Radisson marked for somebody else, now you know why. And obviously that's a minor one, but it's a serious one. Moving on, we're going to be talking about OPCO Health. They are another one in the American Medical Collection Agency that has disclosed, like LabQuest and or LabCorp and Quest, and they had 422,600 customers affected. So if you have anything to do with OPCO Health, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Evite. It's one of the largest websites on the planet. A lot of people use it to send out invitation and plan parties and all of that. They just got hit. So they officially admitted to a security breach that happened back in April. At the time, a hacker named Gnostic Players put up for sale the customer data from six different companies, which included a ton from Evite. The hacker claimed to be selling 10 million Evite user records that included full names, email addresses, IP addresses, and clear text passwords. And I hope Evite is not saving stuff in clear text. I cringe every time I hear that. This hack took place in February 2019. So if you have any kind of login or have been using that since before February of 2019, odds are you just got hit and put into the dark web. Go change your password. Now, the next one is Graceland University, Oregon State University, and Missouri Southern State University. Within 48 hours, all three disclosed data breaches impacting potentially personally identifiable information of students and employees following phishing attacks. So no evidence has been found that this information has been used. Again, that's virtually impossible to prove. But if you have anything to do with Graceland University, Oregon State, or Missouri Southern State, you may have a bit of an issue in that they just got hit. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Union Labor Life Insurance. Now, an employee fell victim to a phishing attack, which basically gave the hacker login credentials and potentially breached health data. Now, the compromised data included plan names, member names, addresses, dates of birth, social security numbers, personal health information for the individuals and their family members. 87,400 patients possibly affected. So if you are a member of a union and you use Union Labor Life Insurance, heads up to you. And finally, we're going to be talking about basically a major issue that might impact multiple corporations around the globe. Researchers have discovered over 40,000 Kubernetes and Docker container hosting devices exposed to the public through misconfigurations. Now, Kubernetes and Docker are both they're both container systems that people use to spin up databases for public consumption and all of this. And so misconfiguring this may mean that sensitive data on the back end of this might be compromised or possibly exfiltrated and all of that. Now, Palo Alto Networks, which is one of the premier firewall makers and research outfits on the planet, their Unit 42 revealed that the results of their latest research has shown this. This discovery was made via a simple Shodan search. Again, I've talked about Shodan a little earlier, how you can search for stuff. 23,353 Kubernetes containers were found in this way, misconfigured, located mainly in the United States, as well as Ireland, Germany, Singapore, and Australia. Even more, 23,354 misconfigured Docker containers were also discovered exposed to the internet, mainly in China, US, Germany, Hong Kong, and France. And I quote, "This does not necessarily mean that each of these 40,000 plus platforms are vulnerable to exploits or even the leakage of sensitive data. It simply highlights that seemingly basic misconfiguration practices exist and can make organization targets for further compromising events. Seemingly simple misconfigurations within cloud services can lead to severe impacts on organizations." Now, this has happened several times in the past. Hackers actually exploited weak security configurations to steal keys and tokens for 190,000 Docker Hub accounts, And poor container security also led to a major breach of 13 million user accounts at an organization called Ladders. And so we don't know how we are configuring the cloud. And a lot of us are relying on the cloud, especially in business, when we have these, like, let's say, smaller, more customized software that are hosting it in the cloud. They may be misconfigured because a lot of them don't hire qualified people to do it. They just assume that network infrastructure is network infrastructure, whether it's, you know, in your office or it's sitting in the cloud. And that is simply not the case. And so it really behooves us to understand how we are locking down the cloud. And wow, those were your breaches of the last couple of weeks. And we have gone on for about 28 minutes here. So were you affected? You probably were. Just given the scope of this, you probably were. But with that, I hope you guys are staying safe and you're staying online. And those are your breaches of the week. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin. And this week's deep dive, I think, is actually a rather critical issue, not just for the United States, but just for society in general. And I think it's an important topic to discuss. And what we're going to be talking about is, are we basically one major hack away from a complete societal breakdown? Now, let me give you some notes here on various things that have happened over the years, starting with something that literally happened right around Father's Day, or rather the day before Father's Day, starting the day before Father's Day, ending on Father's Day, if you will. And we're going to move on from there. Now, during that time frame, so this is probably a few days ago if you're listening to this, you know, on the air, or maybe a couple of weeks ago if you're listening to this on SoundCloud and iTunes, but Argentina, Uruguay, and Paraguay had a massive blackout that hit tens of millions of people, and their authorities are still largely in the dark about what caused the collapse of the interconnected grid, and they're basically still tallying the damage from that. Now, we may know by the time that you hear this, especially if you're on SoundCloud and iTunes, what the culprit is, but it's speculated that this is some kind of attack on their grid, meaning a cyber attack might have hit this and knocked them out. And to just understand the scope of what happened here, because so many people in Argentina specifically got hit, public transportation was completely halted in Buenos Aires. Phone and internet communications were disrupted, water supplies were cut off, shops were forced to close, and patients dependent on home medical equipment were urged publicly to go to hospitals that had backup generators. And so we can see that strategically hitting, assuming this was a hack of their power grid, just how disruptive this can be. And we know from experience that cyber attacks have the ability to cause these kinds of issues. So let's start back in 2012 real quick, and we're going to be jumping around, but I think this is really important. The Secretary of Defense at the time was Leon Panetta, and he delivered a policy speech that he said was, quote unquote, a clarion call for Americans to take cybersecurity seriously. Attacks that can cripple a country, he said, are no longer theoretical. Now, according to the Washington Post at this time in 2012, Panetta acknowledged an attack by the Shamoon virus was basically, this is one of the first major viruses that hit infrastructure, and this malware targeted Aramco. This is the Saudi Arabian state oil company, and knocked out more than 30,000 computers, making them permanently inoperable. And we saw in that basically a major infrastructure across all of Saudi Arabia go down. And there were obviously adverse impacts to their commerce, their society, and all of that. Now, that's a very tightly controlled country, so we're not exactly seeing riots and all of that as a result of this. But in more open countries with those that have, let's say, more flexible laws for public demonstrations and all of that, this is a very serious problem. In 2015, we're going to flash forward a little bit. At the end of 2015 in December, The Ukraine had one of their power grids hit under a cyber attack that happened against that basically took place by Russian threat actors. If you recall, this is around the same time that Russia was invading Crimea. So Russian hackers hit the power grid. And basically, this is considered to be the first known successful cyber attack on a full-blown power grid. Hackers were able to successfully compromise the information systems of three energy distribution companies in Ukraine and temporarily disrupt electricity to basically 80,000 consumers. Now, they took it one step further. They also hit the phone system in that region so that they basically made people deaf and blind. They shut off the power, and then they basically downed the phones. So you were not able to call and complain to your power company if the power went out on you. That's a very serious issue. Now, as we're moving on, let's talk about 2018 right now. So 2018, last year, the U.S. intelligence chief Dan Coats warned on July 12th, so about a year ago or so, that the threat was growing for a devastating cyber assault on critical U.S. infrastructure, saying, and I quote, "The warning lights are blinking red again." Now, he goes on to say that Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea are launching daily cyber strikes on computer networks, on federal, state, and local government agencies, U.S. corporations, academic institutions, and on and on. And so we have the U.S. intelligence chief telling us that this is going on to this. Now, by virtue of this, we seem to be escalating this just basically in terms of our response. And so this coming from the New York Times and some other, some other sources, the United States is actually now starting to step up their digital incursions into Russia's electric power grid, and they are considering this a warning to Putin, and basically a demonstration of how this administration, the Trump administration, is using cyber technology and its authority to basically to deploy cyber tools more aggressively, and we are escalating this as well. Now, in interviews over the past few months or so, officials have described that previously unreported deployments of American computer code inside Russia's power grid and other targets has basically been classified, and now they're starting to basically publicly discuss this as well. And this was specifically directed at Moscow's disinformation and hacking units around the 2018 midterm election. In other words, tit for tat. If they are going to hit us, we are going to hit them back. Now, advocates of a more aggressive strategy said, obviously, that this was long overdue. We have had tons of public warnings from the Department of Homeland Security, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and on, that Russia has inserted malware that could sabotage American power plants, oil and gas pipelines, water supplies, and everything like that. You know, but this also carries a significant risk of continuing this escalation and could possibly ignite a digital cold war. So it's not quite mutually assured destruction. And I've talked about this in the past, in that we have way more infrastructure than Russia does. And so if we are looking at total infrastructure outages, that would be a very serious and devastating issue for the United States. And we're going to be getting into an example of that that we actually went through here about 10, 15 years ago or so. But here's the thing. Russia has quite a bit to lose as well. I mean, if we are able to successfully shut them down, we could immobilize Russia, I think, significantly easier than Russia could immobilize us, only because we have such a vast infrastructure. That said, if Russia is being strategic, they could just simply target urban areas and shut them down, as opposed to, like, let's say, shutting down all kinds of commerce. So in other words, if you're basically, like, let's say, a farmer in a low populated area, odds are your grid is not going to be hit in the same way that, like, a Los Angeles or Chicago or New York or Houston, Atlanta, et cetera, would be hit. Those are the heavy urban populations in the United States. And so that, I think, is something to really consider. Now, the Trump administration declined to describe the specific actions it was taking under these new authorities. And these authorities, for the record, were granted separately by the White House and the Congress last year to the United States Cyber Command, which is an arm of the Pentagon that runs the military's offensive and defensive cyber operations in the world. And so this is where we're at. This is the state. We know that, you know, according to our intelligence and other reports, that we are being probed. We potentially have dormant malware sitting in our electrical grids in the same way that we are now escalating that and doing that to others. We know that China, Russia, Iran, North Korea are launching daily cyber attacks against government, from incredibly local to massively federal. And this is the world that we live in. And so that's the backdrop for the discussion today, in the sense that, what are we going to do in terms of society if we have a complete and utter outage? Now, what if the electrical grid goes down? And just as we've seen in Argentina, public transportation stopped. Nobody could use any of their electronics outside of, you know, let's say, quickly depleting batteries. You know, people with medical conditions at home were urged to go to hospitals with backup generators. Shops closed. Commerce stopped. It was a complete societal breakdown. Now, fortunately, Argentina and basically the interconnected Uruguay and Paraguay to this, we're able to get the grid back on within 24 hours or so, and everything is good. But this begs a test. Is something like this a field test? Now, we can look at societal breakdowns and just exactly what goes wrong when stuff goes wrong very quickly. So, in other words, we had a situation about, and I think it was 2005 or so, with Hurricane Katrina hitting New Orleans. Now, if you know New Orleans, for most of it, I believe New Orleans is under sea level, I think, except for the French Quarter, which wasn't nearly as affected as every part of New Orleans, from what I recall. But we had a complete societal breakdown. The power grid was lost. Places were flooded. Nothing was open. Shops were a complete mess. You know, the grid was completely slammed for communications because it got oversaturated, and half the grid probably went down on top of it. So the remaining grid for cellular communications was picking up the load for everybody else. We had riots. We had looting. You know, we had a lot of medical issues because people were not able to get attended to. We had bands of people, like in suburbs, for example, groups of homeowners that got together, boarded up, and started patrolling their streets armed. The police came out and said, we're going to confiscate all handguns. And if you are listening to this in the United States, you know how unprecedented that is, especially because we have the Second Amendment. But the cops said, we're enforcing a curfew and we're confiscating weapons. And videos came out of the cops tackling little old ladies with guns and all of that. And I'm not getting into a debate on whether we should or should not have guns in this society. The point is, we do right now. And what just happened was a complete antithesis. The police were trying to maintain order, and police populations relative to large population centers like New Orleans, you know, there's very few. I mean, I think the Chicago itself has millions of people in Chicagoland area, and we have probably tens of thousands of police. So if you've got millions of unruly people, that is an incredibly tough job for the police to do, especially if the populace is armed. And so that is something that we need to look at. But we can look at the results of this, the aftermath of something like a Hurricane Katrina, where we've got an extended outage, basically a complete societal breakdown, which happened virtually overnight. I mean, it was rather amazing to see, for those of you that experienced that, or just rather witnessed it. I was not there. Experienced meaning, you know, seeing the news reports, you know, in your own country of people basically just completely breaking down in a city. It was a complete and utter mess. So if we're looking at that, if we're seeing all of this happening, we have serious problems on our hands, in the sense that all a Russia would have to do, or a China, would be to hit the power grid, lock up the telecommunications on top of that, and once the generators run out for an extended period of time, that's it. We're in the dark. We're deaf, dumb, and blind in that sense. And then what happens? What happens when you can't go to the supermarket and stock up? Or there's a run on the supermarket because everybody's trying to get there, and then a riot breaks out of the supermarket, which we saw in past hurricanes. So that is a serious issue. You know, we have price gouging. People can't leave the area if they're immobile. You know, death rate ramps up because first responders can't get anywhere, nor do they have communication. You know, it's a serious issue. So I think that if we are looking at this, it really behooves us to be looking at our power plants, looking at our dams, our electrical systems, our physical infrastructure within the United States that is critical infrastructure, and then defending it to the nth degree. We cannot sit here and basically say, well, everything's going to be fine and it's no big deal if the, you know, if the lights go out, you know, I'll just read a book. You know, well, it's not that well. You still have to eat, you know, your kids have to eat, little Fluffy, your dog has to eat, and by virtue of this, if you don't have access to these things, you're going to run out quick. Now, I'm not saying everybody here needs to be doomsday preppers and, you know, build bunkers and stock up, you know, for with 2 years of food, like canned foods and all of that. But I think what we really need to do is take a good hard look at what we are doing as a society to prepare for something like that. Not just the cyber defense strategies that our local governments, corporations, and even ourselves need to put in place to ensure that we are properly maintaining our own security, our own integrity, our own availability of data, not to mention confidentiality, but we need to look at how we are planning for this. We are raising an entire generation of children that are basically bored without technology, glued to their phones, solely dependent. What happens if that grid goes down? You know, what happens when, you know, we are using these things for communication or we are using these things to coordinate efforts and we can't? What does that look like? What's the contingency plan? What's the backup plan? I mean, we all sending smoke signals? I mean, how does this work? And so I think these are questions that we have to answer together as a society. And I think it really starts with understanding a real gap analysis, taking a real hard look at ourselves and saying, hey, this is where I'm going to stink in a situation like this. This is what I am not good at. And how do I overcome that? How do I live without this? You know, for myself, for example, I am always with computers and technology and all of that. So, you know, would I personally, like, if everything went down, would I be able to live off the land, you know, go hunting, defend myself if I had to, you know, all these kinds of things? You know, what happens when, you know, we can't pump gas and, you know, the gas runs out of the cars for an extended period of time because we're in such a hot cyber war? So it's a lot of things to consider. And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.